Blog Talk Radio. Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yes, wow. I don't know where you are, but it's gotta stop being hot. I'm in New York City, and it's in the 90s again. There's nowhere to escape. I mean, if I go north, it's still like close to 90 or in the high 80s. I certainly don't want to go south, but anyway, I'm here in my semi-air-conditioned. I guess the energy, they've cut down on the energy because I don't feel that cool in what I consider my refrigerator room or my non-refrigerator room. But anyway, I wasn't able to do a show while I was in Winnipeg, Manitoba in Canada, where it was hot. But now that I'm back in New York, I'm doing the show, and we're going to have Frank Albo to talk about this thing called the Hermetic Code, which is in the legislative building there. Basically, it's like cracking the Da Vinci Code. Similar, but, well, he'll tell you all this. And then also David Cotre, I believe it's pronounced. He's the manager of the Gold Lounge up there in the Fairmont Hotel in Winnipeg. And he's going to tell us what the benefits. I mean, when you open, like, you take the Gold or the VIP and up in a hotel, is it worth it? What kind of attention do you get and stuff like that? Then, we're going back to Norfolk because I had to finish up. And we're going to have Mark. Mark is going to come on and talk about the Segway tour that we had downtown Norfolk. He was the same person who I did the Segway tour with in Virginia Beach. And then lastly, last but not least, though, it's definitely not least. Okay, I'm doing a tasting. I have it all set up. I got different chicken salads set up for this one. And we're going to be talking with Rowena to talk about her place called Rowena's, and it's jams and jellies and all kinds of gourmet food kind of thing there. And I wish I had she's got these bun cakes, so we'll talk about it. I wish I had the bun cakes at home here, but we're going to be doing some of the sauces and stuff like that to talk about, and that's what we're doing for this show now. And of course, speaking of cake, you know, what would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale. and you can get them at thebrownies.com. I'm looking to see. Oh, I see. I just heard, you know, if you heard, I'm sure you heard mail truck, which is probably the email reminding me that I'm doing this show, of course. But anyway, I wish I had brownies. Well, I'll talk. There's so much to talk about regarding Winnipeg, and as I'm waiting for Frank to call in, I have some gelato. There's this place in called Nucci's, Nucci Gelati, and well, I'll have this guy at Michael, who's the food and beverage manager at the Fairmont Hotel, had advised me to go to this place. He said it's like the best gelato. And I went, okay, I'll take his word for it, because so far the best gelato I've ever had is in Provincetown at I Dream of Gelato. So I went to this place, Nucci's, and they'd been around for like 44 years. They were telling me they've got the husband, the wife, I saw the son there, and I tasted the gelato. And I have to say, it's the best cold processed gelato I've ever had. Now, because like Michelle up in Provincetown, she does a hot process. And with the hot process, for some reason, it comes out, I don't want to say it's not smoother, it's like creamier, even though there's no cream in there. But the cold process comes out so good because they're not using any artificial stuff in there. And that's kind of what you'll find when you're going to gelato places. Sometimes they use cream, and they also, you know, stuff that's artificial. And it's, you know, what can I say? The whole thing is to have the Italian, you know, the way it's supposed to be made. And what flavors did I have? Oh, I had the dark chocolate, of course. And I had the Amarino cherries, which is the Amarino cherries is something you're going to have to get imported from Italy. And then I also had the hazelnut. God. And I usually could tell by the hazelnut to see if it's, you know, flavored or, you know, or real. And that was real. And then if that wasn't enough, they wanted me to taste a few others. I had the lemon and a raspberry, everything. That was just too good. And I guess it's maybe to my advantage that neither place is close enough to me to keep at it. I went, made a mistake, and, well, not made a mistake. I bought Ciao Bella, you know. It's okay. Just doesn't come close. What can I do? Anyway, and then food-wise, I also found this Korean restaurant. And it was not your typical restaurant. It's like you come in and there's this, like, space. And on one side of it, you can buy all the things you want to knit, and then on the other side is tables and chairs, and there's tables and chairs in the front near the window, and there's a place where you could sit, and there's free Wi-Fi, and there's a television, and in terms of something to eat, it's like then there's this counter, and you can order Korean food, and it is authentic. The name of the place is called Kimchi, which is, and needless to say, it came with my with my meal. And normally I don't eat the kimchi because it's too spicy. But the owner made this just enough spicy. In other words, it wasn't spicy enough where I had to grab my glass of Vietnamese coffee to you know, regarding with my mouth, you know, burning. And so that's, and I forgot what I had. Oh, I had this dish, like this bowl of like, well, it wasn't soupy, but it had all these vegetables, and it had short rib beef. But when they have it like in that, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's like a thin sliced kind of thing, from, you know, with the bone. And so, and that was pretty good. I think there was also some seaweed in it too. Very healthy, very good, delicious. Let's see what else. Other than those two places, oh, I stopped in at a bakery, a Filipino bakery. Well, okay, I don't want to say surprisingly. I guess I don't know where ethnic people move to, you know. But there's a very large Filipino population in Winnipeg. And particularly employed in the food and hospitality and there. Well, I mean, that's the thing I noticed as far as in the hotel itself. I'm sure that not everybody is doing that, but that's the thing I noticed in regards to the hotel, which, and then 2 days before I left to go up there, I was at Mama Mina's over here in Woodhaven in Queens and got like a couple of days worth of my favorite Filipino food. So I got up there and had dinner the first night I was there, and lo and behold, the menu was featuring a separate menu of Filipino style menu. And I have to say it was everybody, I think the Filipino population at the hotel kind of did some tasting, I think. And they all agreed it was style, you know. Well, although I can't understand, I mean, you could really make some of the menu items that Mama Mina has. Not terribly difficult, but it was okay. It was, yeah, Filipino style. And that's basically like the in terms of places that I ate, because, and as we'll talk about when David calls in, is the food that's up in the lounge. So don't know what's happening with Frank Albo. I hope he got, I mean, I said, you know, 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Let's see what he, Frank, let's see, yeah, make sure that I'm clicking on his thing. And let's go for this down here. And I wrote, maybe that's what I said. That's what I think he thought, because I said I'd like to have doing a show this Friday, 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. How about coming on at 5:05 p.m. after I do my intro? I think he thought I probably should have said 4:05 your time, but that's what happens with miscommunication. But, well, when he calls, I have to see who call in at 5. Let's see who's going to call in. The next person called. Well, David will call in about 15 minutes. And then what I'll do, I'll see what I can move to, you know, to get this in, because this Hermetic Code tour is really, yeah, it's really something else. So, well, let's have a little music here. What do I got? Well, oh, look at the fourth. Yes, yes, Esther is here. Where's Eunice? Is Eunice going to come in? Esther, is Eunice going to come in? Okay, okay. Well, they're both hanging around. All right, so, especially now that they have their own blog. But let's see. The show out, the Promises is on Broadway, and let's see, let's have a bunch of good songs here, but okay, here's one I'm sure we all know. One show that's going off very soon, which kind of saddens me, is Lend Me a Tenor with Tony Shalhoub. And it absolutely has to be the funniest show on Broadway at the moment. Has to be. Now, when he leaves, though, the next funniest show that's on Broadway is the 39 Steps. That is like anybody who, the more Hitchcock movies you've seen, the funnier you'll be, you know, peeing in your pants there. And even if you haven't seen all of them, if you know Hitchcock style, you know, stuff like that, it is like so hilarious. Okay, and that's in terms of Broadway. I haven't been to many shows because I've been so busy running around and, you know, and doing other stuff. I love traveling, so I've been traveling, and sometimes I get to see a show when I travel, but not much. I also have to tell you, I just to put it out there, Esther and Eunice were commenting something about that they were on Facebook, and they saw what they think is their mother. I don't know. I'll have to go check that out there, and see. I'll look in their blog and see what that's all about. Yeah, because they in case they if you don't know, they got their own blog. It's Esther and Eunice Adventures. blogspot.com. So that's Esther spelled Esther, and Eunice Eunice. adventures.blogspot.com. Ah, yeah, they've been, doing some naughty things, and somehow or other even got into the cockpit of the plane, and the pilots were teaching them how to fly a plane, too. Amazing. But, some of the other things I did in Winnipeg. I went to, they have, it's like at the Manitoba Museum, and it kind of says, all about Manitoba kind of thing, as opposed, I mean, there's art, there's the sculptures, but there's also things like a replica of the ship Nonsuch. This has to do something with the. Wait a minute. Oh God, just went blank. Something. A company. I'm so lethargic. That's what happens. It's not cool enough in my house, and I've become a little lethargic, and I hate when that happens. Just as long as I won't go to sleep, though. Let's see. In something with India, I don't know, I'll find it. But anyway, so there was a replica of the ship there, of Nonsuch. And also different ways that they, you know, the past that people lived. And, some hands-on things. But mostly, you know, look and, you know, and don't touch. Well, I know that Esther and Eunice enjoyed it, apparently, because they said so in their blog. Then I went to another museum I went to is the Winnipeg Art Gallery. And there was a lot of course, art and sculptures there as well. I thought it was pretty big an art gallery that, you know, it's not like, not as like the Met or the Museum of Modern Art, but it was pretty large, had a couple of floors and lots of galleries, and I would definitely recommend that as an attraction to see. And I went to an area called the Forks. No, they didn't say Fork You to me. It was kind of like it's like combination of mall kind of, no, not mall. I wouldn't say mall because there's little boutique shops and little restaurants and places like farmer markets and things like that. So that's the. And then I went to the end isn't in there. So bad. Yeah, they have an inn, and I went there to have a, just got a message. It's not from anybody from who's calling in. I went to a spa at Inn at the Forks. Well, of course, what else? And I went to a spa, and I had they call it like a cocoon. I think at some point I'll have them on, maybe like next week, to talk about the whole thing. So I had a spa treatment there. And I did a lot of hanging out kind of in the lounge. That's why when David calls and I'll explain, it was they were also having a festival. They had a folk festival going on. And Fairmont Hotel was hosting. And I guess, I don't know, in terms of, like, it seemed like a lot of people were staying there, the performers and people coming. They also had their own, like, hospitality center. But the cool thing was that, like, in the evenings, they would, like, jam in the lounge area, you know, with the booze area, with the lounge area. Downstairs, not the lounge I was at. So they would jam there, and that was great because you just got to get the sense of just different people, performing their music. I didn't see enough of it. I say a lot, don't I? I know. I wasn't trained for the radio. I was trained for to be in front, to perform. Anyway, the thing I had caught one night, especially, was Ukrainian. It was a Ukrainian. Well, they were performers. I don't know whether. I mean, that was the music. I didn't hear an accent or anything when they spoke, so I wasn't, that was just the music. I'm getting some that it's sent to me. I can maybe get some put up on there so they can hear some of the folk music. So that's what I kind of did in the evenings, as opposed to, it's too damn hot. It was just hot there too. I mean, it wasn't the first day I was there was like in, the old 90-ish kind of thing. Well, close to it. And then it cooled off a little bit. It was much more tolerable. I was able to do a walking tour, and which I think maybe on next week's show I'll get the person to handle those tours to come on and chat about that at the walking tours. And what else I did? There was one more. Oh, yes, there was another tour. The tour was, it was like theater in a cemetery. It wasn't anything like spooky or anything. It was just they had three actors, and they changed costumes, and it's basically like a history lesson that has to do with a guy whose last name, Riel, R-I-E-L, is like the French kind of area, I suppose, of Winnipeg, and what that was all about, and which bridge or what building or whatever got named after them. And that would have been fine if it wasn't for these mosquitoes. I think in the summertime, Winnipeg is well known for the mosquitoes. I had much bug spray on my bod to deal with that. But that wasn't too bad. Oh, I went to see, all these years that Rent had been on Broadway here in New York, I never got to see it. Do you believe that? Yeah, I wouldn't believe that. And I went to, so it was there that I saw it. Oh God, I don't want to cut this. I don't want to cut the story. When David called in, so I won't go. But basically, okay. So it was like the theater is in a, it's outdoor theater, kind of. Well, it was more like a, well, I don't know if you say an amphitheater, but it was, but with a roof. That was kind of it. Yeah, which was this way. It in case it rains, you're not getting wet, you know. But it's not blocking the mosquitoes from coming in, and I was all prepared for that, so that wasn't a problem either. So that was pretty much my trip in Winnipeg. I would love to go back. They're in the midst of building a human rights center or museum or something like that. And I understand the Queen was there, and she went to put a cornerstone. But well, let's see. Look at that. I have, hello.
Hello, Merle.
David?
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah, hi, David.
How are
you? Okay, you know, I think I confused people because I had, what do you call it? Frank Albo was supposed to call in, and I think he thought he was calling in 5 o'clock on your time.
Oh. But I got it right.
But you got it right. So I was just commenting about this, about just being on the gold floor. Not much. So, but I want you to tell us about what does it mean? You know, why bother? You know, spending your money to be on a gold floor or a VIP floor. What is it like?
Well, I think you would bother because it's. Not just the fact that you get a complimentary breakfast, you get complimentary hors d'oeuvres in the evening. It's the personalized service that you get between 6:30 in the morning and 11 o'clock at night. Basically anything, any needs that you have whatsoever are taken care of by your own personal concierge that's located on the gold floor in the gold lounge. And they are highly professional people that are trained to take care of any kind of issues and think outside the box and take great care of people, like yourself last weekend.
Yes. Well, I understand. Like what I know that what happened is that once I got there, like I go in the elevator and I go right up to the 19th floor as opposed to checking in at the desk. I don't know that. For me anyway, that was the first time that happened versus like checking in at the front desk and then going to the VIP floor. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. And did you, was that a good thing? You enjoyed
that?
Oh
yeah. I like that because like I'm checking in and I'm never pretty much, well, I don't want to say deal with, but that's, I don't mean that in a negative term, but I don't have to deal with going downstairs every time I want something, you know, going
exactly.
to the front desk.
Yes.
That everything is like, it's your personal people.
That's right. And you may have had one of the longest check-ins in history because we had so much fun with you. We didn't want to let you go. Isn't that true?
This is quite true, and especially since you met Esther and Eunice as well.
That's right. Once they were introduced, there was just no stopping it.
So, what kind of things? Like, name some things that you do for people that what things like come up for people that are in. And I guess they check in. They're basically it's the 18th and the 19th floor, right?
That's right, and two suites on the 20th floor.
Oh, I should have. I didn't get to see.
I should have toured you through the Royal and the Crown Suite, but I think they were occupied. So.
Oh, okay.
Maybe next time we'll put you there.
Oh, yeah, when I come back in 2 years, hopefully this, I can, I would love to be able to stay there again.
If the museum is done in 2 years, yes, we'll have you come back.
Okay, that's just something else. Okay, so give us some ideas of what people, what their needs are that when they're there.
Well, I think some of the things that we've done in the past, it's not just about the needs, it's kind of like the personal bond that can sometimes be created between people that work at the hotel and people that are visiting the hotel. I have a number of people that I have in my life that I'm quite close to, and I met them by working on the gold floor. And they always check in with me and make sure that I'm doing okay, and if ever they come back to the hotel, I mean, they're always looking for me, and we always have a great rapport whenever we do get together.
Well, that's cool. And you're the manager, right? Of
that? I am the manager, yes.
Okay.
Yep. But in the past, when I've seen that people are traveling through and, say, aren't really too sure what they should be doing, whether it's just in our city or going further on to, say, I met a couple that were traveling from Western Canada to Eastern Canada, and I basically planned their whole trip from front to finish. And they appreciated it so much that when they came back through, they came back just to see me. So, I think in another life I wanted to be a travel agent, so I'm living that dream as well.
So let's say, for instance, if people need things in terms of their rooms, let's say, for instance, I'm just as an idea. Okay, I need I want a pair of slippers, kind of say. I mean, this is something that I would go into the lounge and ask you guys versus calling housekeeping.
Yeah, that's right. We would take care of it. The slippers would be delivered personally to your door, and there are also slippers that you can take home with you, because once you get them, they're yours.
The first time that I saw slippers like that, I looked at them and I went, these can't be like they reuse them kind of thing.
No.
So I went, well, all right, I'm going to take them home. I mean,
you're going to have to start your own collection of Fairmont slippers, I'm telling you. I've got my own. I love them. They're great. But another thing that we do, Merle, because we have such a great rapport with the other concierges in our city that work for Air Canada at the airport, we're able to work through them and do meet and greets, or in the past we've had little gifts waiting on the seats of the guest when they are on their departing flight. We have, say, a book on Winnipeg or a book on Manitoba or something local, and it's a complete surprise, and you'd be surprised how far that goes to make a memory for that person.
That's so great. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I would have, and here I had.
What did you have, a barf bag on your foot?
No,
on your
actually,
seat when you left?
No, I have to say, no, there was nothing on my seat. Wait, did you plan on something?
No, 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 no.
Oh, okay, good. Then,
you know,
actually, what happened was I was saying before, I had asked the pilot if he'll mind taking a picture with Esther
with
and Eunice.
Chicken.
And
okay.
The pilot said to me, well, wait, when you come into the plane and come into the cockpit, so I have a photo.
Oh, excellent.
Of the pilot and co-pilot, like, teaching them how to steer the plane.
Oh, excellent. So they were into it too, were they?
Oh, yeah. They had such a great time.
Well, I'm telling you, those chickens are famous. Seems everybody knows them now.
Oh, I don't know if you got to see their blog yet.
Well, I haven't been able to because it's blocked at my work. I can't get onto it there, but I'll try from home.
Oh, okay. It's really very cute. But anyway, so to get back, one of the things that I had found, and I don't know whether, and I think it was definitely with the atmosphere. I found it extremely comfortable to be around, if I say strangers, anybody who was kind of there kind of thing, to talk to people. I thought it was a great atmosphere for that, mm-hmm. and I think anybody who who was up there was like
that. We've had a number of guests that have kind of become friends, you know, just by talking to each other or, you know, running into each other on the golf floor.
Yeah.
It's kind of an atmosphere that tends to promote a friendly situation between complete strangers. So.
Yeah. And I, as a matter of fact, what happened was that that couple, the one, and that was so cute, they were doing their, it wasn't their honeymoon, no, they were just coming to,
celebrating,
they hadn't had a honeymoon.
Yeah.
So, right. And what happened was that they gave me their name and address or whatever, and I can't find it. And now I'm going, oh my God, and I didn't have a card to give them. So now I don't.
Well, I can get it for you.
You'll get it for me. You don't have to say it on the air, who they are or whatever. But, yeah, you'll get it for me. Because I felt bad because I know they wanted me to communicate with them.
Yeah.
And
Well,
who wouldn't? One of the things I want to kind of like also kind of describe, I mean, you can really wind up having breakfast and dinner.
Yes.
You know, describe like a typical kind of breakfast that's there.
Well, we have a deluxe continental breakfast, which entails all kinds of, I would say, mostly healthy items. There's some Danish, there's some croissants, there's lots of fruit, yogurt, hard-boiled eggs, salmon, tomatoes, things like that. And then there's usually one hot item in the morning. Usually it's something of an eggy nature, and then once that's finished, we at about 11:30 we put out an honor bar, which is everything's complimentary with the exception of the liquor that gets posted to the room account just by filling up the little honor bar chits. But between 5 and 7 we have an evening offering as well, which is like canapes and hors d'oeuvres that are provided for the guests to enjoy.
And I have
and every day is different, so.
Yeah. And I have to say that, I mean, they're really, it's not like it's like, oh, all right, I'm stuck with this. And I honestly want to share that I've been to, you know, places. I'm not going to name it. I don't have to name it. But I've been to, you know, the VIP floors of places where, you know, when they've had this, it was like, yeah, it's okay,
it's
kind of thing.
Boring.
Or it tasted, oh, I know what it was. A lot, not a lot, I tend to see it was like, might have been prepackaged things, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Like, well, we've kind of gone the healthy route, and I think the week that you were visiting, we had started a new menu. So you were kind of one of our guinea pigs, and I hope you enjoyed what you saw.
You know why I'm laughing? That one thing that we all tasted and went, oh, God.
Oh, the watermelon and the blue cheese? Yeah, that wasn't a passable item at all.
That was the only thing there that went, who's done this?
Yeah. Well, 1 out of 15 people said that it was interesting. The rest hated it. So.
But, yes, the food is... But the thing is, the food is so good that I wanted to sit there
and enjoy
eat dinner from it, because it was like, oh, if I went out and ordered dinner, I mean, these things are. If you kind of look at the things, you could kind of say, okay, here's my appetizer, here's my entree, here's my dessert, or you know, here's the fruit, here's this kind of a thing, you know, to do that. And and it's just
it's got enough variety that you could have a complete meal.
Oh yeah. Now, who does? Is there one particular person who designs a menu for things like that?
Well, I'm involved in it, and Colleen, who works on the floor as well, has a little bit of a passion for food and beverage. So she's kind of been overseeing the reaction from our guests and providing feedback to myself and the culinary team. And then there's one of our sous chefs in the kitchen named Eric, who takes care of it from the kitchen side as well.
Oh, okay. So
there's a number of people involved.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So in other words, there's a particular chef that does a preparation just for this?
He heads it up, and he does the brainstorming and the menu planning, and then he has some of his team that supports him by preparing the items.
Right.
As well.
You know, and I forgot to even ask, is the food like being sent up, or is there a kitchen back there?
The food is sent up from our Velvet Glove kitchen. We go down and pick it up.
I was just kind of wondering. It just occurred to me, like, I don't remember.
No, our pantry wasn't that big.
Oh, okay.
Not big enough for production, just big enough for storage, really.
Does somebody have to, I mean, it's not, there's no dumb waiter or anything like
that,
right?
No, no. There's a service elevator.
Oh, it's a service elevator that you go down. Oh, okay. I just kind of wondered, you know, is that seeing somebody disappear and come up with the food, and I'm going, but they didn't, how did they get there? Where did they go? Okay.
You wondered how we made it all happen.
Yeah.
Now you know.
And also, just to let people know, you and usually in this kind of atmosphere, you'll have a computer so you can get your email. It's like you'll have... Now, there is a business center in the hotel, too, right?
Yes, in the lobby there is a business center as well.
Right. So you have kind of like sort of your own private business center.
Yes. And
so
most guests
can...
staying on the floor would, I would assume, prefer to use the one that we have available for them.
Yeah, and you can also print things out. So you can print out your...
Yes.
Your
Even in color, we have a color printer, yes.
Yeah. Pretty.
And it comes in handy for any guests that are departing and want to print their boarding passes for their outgoing flights. So.
Or if you just want to go on and see the trailer of Up the Down Staircase.
Yes, which I saw, which looked like an amazing production back in the 60s.
Yes, it certainly was. Amazing and amusing at the same time.
And amusing at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't really like... Well, you obviously you're not going to get blocked on things. You can pretty much get whatever on the internet.
Yes, on the guest computer, you can get whatever. On our actual in-house computers, we get blocked on a number of things.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed, and you have games up there and stuff like that for people to play. I thought it was interesting watching. Families and this sitting up there. I mean, what was the interesting part is that I noticed that, you have every opportunity to say, oh, I'm going to take this game and bring it to my room.
Mm-hmm.
But
most people actually stay in the lounge and
just the atmosphere and everything, that people, really just want to hang out and be there. And I saw I had found of interest was I was, it's for me, let's say, I would go in there and I'm there for a little while and then I have to leave and, go do my thing.
Yeah.
And I had remembered there was one woman there who was, she must have spent hours and she was just relaxing and having a drink and just like being there or reading a book and stuff like that. I thought it was wow, here's a space that it's such a warm space that even though she could have done that in her own room, it was, just being there and just listening to people. And it was just so cool.
I think you were there on a good weekend, too, because it was actually quite busy. There was a lot of people around and a lot of people using the lounge, too. So
you
got to see a lot of different types of... situations and people as well.
Yeah, I was also commenting that with the folk festival that the Fairmont Hotel hosted.
That's correct.
Do you know if the people in terms of hosting? I know they had a hospitality area, but in terms of people who stayed, was that also that they dealt with in terms of hosting? That people would say maybe. Took a block of rooms and things like that?
I think we had a couple of rooms. We didn't have too many. I know
just
that
on the ninth, just on the gold floor.
On the gold floor.
Yeah.
We did have the lady that was in charge of the entire event. She stayed, and then she had a number of her team supporting her, so we would see them come in for breakfast or other needs as well.
Okay, now here's a...
You could kind of pick out who was with the folk festival and who was not.
Yeah, you could sort of. I mean, it's like I sat down there, and there was, and this is not negative that I'm saying, but I sat down there, and there was this woman with, and I guess her hair is blonde, I guess, but she had
with dreadlocks.
Yes, and with all colors and stuff like that, and
yes,
my brain went.
I saw her as well.
Folk festival, something to do with the folk festival.
Yeah, definitely folk festival.
Yeah. And so here's a question that I wanted to pose about like this. Okay, suppose let's say somebody is on the 15th floor,
mm-hmm.
And they come up there. Would you know if they belong there or not?
Well, we try to very discreetly and politely through conversation, kind of get a read on a room number or a last name, so that we can monitor in a discreet way whether people are supposed to be there or not, because being that it's such a great place to be, there are sometimes the odd occasion that people kind of filter in when they shouldn't be there.
Okay.
So, but as I said,
I
do it in a positive way.
And here's like another thing. Let's say, okay, so I'm there, and let's say I'm in town, and I have friends in that live in Winnipeg, and I say, "Well, come on and meet me at the hotel, and we can hang out in the lounge." Is that okay? Is that an okay?
Well, we have a rule in that respect as well, that each guest staying on the Gould floor is entitled to one guest and one guest only.
Okay, that's
because we have had the scenario that you just brought forward, where there was like a bar mitzvah or a wedding or something, and they brought their entire family from the city down to the lounge for a family get-together, and we didn't have enough room even for people to be checking in and out. So it's not fair for people that are paying the extra premium to be on the floor to not be able to use it. So we had to put a little bit of a stop to that.
Okay. I mean, and that's fair. That's why I was just kind of curious of, you know, in terms of people, you know, saying, "Hey, up on the 19th floor, you go there and there's free food." You know, that
you have
kind of
you
thing.
Have to be careful about that a little bit.
Yeah, but I think that's with every, and I guess you call that they call like VIP floors.
That's right.
That
mm-hmm.
many hotels. Do you know if like is it very typical of let's say Fairmont hotels to have a Gould floor?
A number of the hotels do have a Gould floor. A significant number in Canada, and more and more throughout the United States, and Bermuda, there's two properties there. They both have Gould floors. It's getting more and more popular all the time.
Yeah.
There is a corporate Gould manager who used to be my boss, and he's now over in China opening a new one currently. So it's getting more and more affluent all the time.
Yeah. What I also do notice when it comes to that, and actually this is the first time that I've experienced this where the lounge is open on the weekend.
Right.
It seemed more typical that from Friday night to Sunday that it's not. That it's so like, you know, you can be up on the VIP floor, but the VIP lounge is not open. It's not even available.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they do this for people, I guess, like for during the week for, I guess, maybe business travelers.
Well, it's a complete different scenario between your weekday clientele and your weekend clientele.
Yeah.
You may have noticed that while you were there.
Yeah.
I think on the weekend, it would be more so where people would be spending more time in the lounge reading a book, things like that. But during the week, mostly people come for breakfast and are kind of on their way and then aren't back until after 5 o'clock for hors d'oeuvre time. So.
Yeah. But all in all, the comment, and I forgot their names too, you know, the couple. I don't suppose you remember their names.
Their last name was Weeb, I believe. Okay. Wiebe.
I just can't remember their names offhand. I'm so bad.
I didn't meet them myself, so, but I will find out for you.
They couldn't give enough praise.
Yes, and they actually left a letter as well thanking us for their experience. So that was very nice.
They couldn't actually even believe how well they were treated, just because they were at the with the gold thing.
Well, that's good.
And I just want to put this out to my audience. I mean, don't when I'm saying that this occurs, don't expect every hotel that has a VIP floor that that this is the treatment you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like this was really, I don't even say above and beyond. This is kind of how I feel that if you're going to be doing this, that this is part of how things should be to make your stay so comfortable
to not only meet expectations, but we like to exceed them. So
yeah,
that is what we're all about.
So who do I have to talk to make sure all of you get raises?
Well, that I can provide to you as well.
Email that to me as well. If you don't think I'm going to do it, you'll be very surprised.
Well, once we have our new GM, you could probably provide that to him.
Oh, when is that going to happen?
The beginning of September.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Our former GM moved to your city, actually, last week.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a Fairmont in Manhattan?
To the Plaza.
Oh, to the Plaza.
To the Plaza. I'm sure
What's the GM's name?
Indu Brar.
Indu?
Indu Brar. B-R-A-R.
I-N-D-O-B-R-A-R?
I-N-D-U.
Okay. Indu Brar.
Yeah, B-R-A-R.
Is that the first or last name?
Indu is the first name. Brar is
the last. Indu. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Then I'll give them a call and see if I could kind of do something. I like to do something, a piece maybe on the Plaza anyway. So
sure,
that will help. It would be really cool if I can get it set up to have me stay a night at the Plaza and see if I get as good a treatment, if I'm as comfortable at a place like the Plaza.
Tell them this is nothing compared to Winnipeg.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, that would be. I can't imagine that I would be as comfortable at the Plaza, no matter even how posh it is.
Yes, exactly.
In terms of
the way you think.
Yeah. Well, it's just as I said, like when I come back there, I hope put me back there. Because what happens with like with tourism, they say, we gave you one place this time, we should try giving you another place another time, and I'm just going to say,
Well, luckily you know me, so that
wouldn't
happen.
So I'll have an in.
You'll have an in.
Yeah.
Definitely.
As opposed to an inu.
Yes.
So, I'm going to let you go. I think I pulled everything out of you that I could, right?
Did I answer all your questions?
Did I ask every possible question I can?
Yeah, I think you did. You did a great job.
I want everybody to kind of be clear. And again, this is like to be clear on what it is about when you pay for a VIP floor kind of a thing at a hotel. And also to be clear that they're not all the same. That's the two points that I'm kind of making on this.
Okay.
But hopefully I'll see you again.
Definitely. We'll
and you'll see the blogs. I'll be starting
I'll
to write the articles pretty soon as well.
Okay. Fantastic.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dave. And say hello say hello to the group for me.
I will do that. Take care, Merle.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Oh, yes. That's so cool. Now, okay, I got to get you on the air. Let me guess. Frank, you're on. Are you on, Frank?
Yep.
I have to tell you, and I knew this was going to happen.
I know what it is, and I just checked my email. It's Eastern Standard Time, Frank.
Yes.
Okay. I just
so I was like blabbering for half an hour going, what the hell is going on? And I went, oh, no, he probably thinks it's on his time.
Yes,
let me just
I did.
See.
I did assume that until I looked at my email and looked at your number and
okay.
Now, EST gave it away.
Just so you know, here's a possibility because I'm going to have somebody else is calling in. And what I might do is I think I'll ask, we're going to be talking about a tour, a Segway tour I took in Norfolk. And when he calls in, I'm going to just like, and I'll be on, you know, I'll just say, you got to do me a favor. I want to make sure I get it in. And I'll have him call on the next show because I really, really want to get into this thing since I just finished talking about the Fairmont Hotel. So I want to get in, and that's where I also got the book. So, yes. So,
okay.
So let's begin by just saying, like, basically introducing, you know, who you are and what this whole thing is all about and how you came across this.
Well, my name is Frank Albo. I have been studying the Manitoba Legislative Building in Winnipeg, Canada for the last 10 years. In my estimation, it's one of the most remarkable structures on the continent, not simply because it has this extraordinary story about scandal, intrigue, and government corruption, but because the architect, who was an unsung genius of the early 20th century, and who was a student of the Western esoteric tradition, namely the Hermetic philosophy and Freemasonry, had used the building as a tableau for all of his very evocative and potent ideas on how architecture can reform the soul. And so I'm currently doing my doctorate at Cambridge University in the history of architecture, where I specialize in the influence of Freemasonry on public architecture. And this building had sent me down a rabbit hole of discovery that I never thought was ever possible. And I've been just enchanted by it throughout, and I offer these regular tours of the building where people come from all over the world, really, to Winnipeg, the Bethlehem of Canada, the least among cities,
yes.
But that we've been graced with this extraordinary monument.
Okay. So now, in other words, what came to point is you studied this and you decided to write a book on it.
Well, yes, I have published several articles, but perhaps the most popular work on it is The Hermetic Code, which is became a Canadian bestseller in like 6 weeks when it was first published in 2007. It was reissued this year. And what I've decided to do in adjunct with it, perhaps if some of your listeners or you're familiar with a very famous book, which I think set off the Da Vinci Code, although 15 years earlier,
yeah.
It was by Umberto Eco, and it's called Foucault's Pendulum. And most people never really got through it because it was so heady and it was just this esoteric mix of ideas and fantasy by a semiologist and a professor from Bologna University. But anyways, what he did there ended up being very much similar to my exploration of the legislative building, where I just couldn't give up the journey. And this year what I offer are tours of the building, because for the most part the text, even though there are several, about 100 illustrations, and it's very colorfully produced, there are ideas which are somewhat complicated. So what I do is I take people through the building. It takes about 90 minutes, and I point out a number of these subliminal messages and how the architect had envisioned the building as a giant talisman. And it's basically a kind of magical device.
Now, what I want to first get into, I think from what I understood, the crux of this had to do in it, things with the numbers.
Well, that's one part of the building's complex
design. That's in terms
design.
Of the interior, right? Or no, not
yeah.
even that. Because
well,
this
no,
thing's having to do with some other places in Winnipeg or something?
No, no, not, it's a standalone building. It's basically the equivalent of, I mean, it's where our laws are enacted in the province
right.
of Manitoba. But the architect had employed basically four esoteric concepts, occult notions from basically the last 500 years. And inscribed them in the building. One of them was numbers. He uses numbers in a way that, for instance, the number 13 repeats throughout the building. In fact, the numbers 5, 8, and 13 repeat throughout the building more than any other sequence of numbers. And this, of course, is very popularized in the Da Vinci Code and other, you know, sensational bestsellers on the golden ratio or this perfect proportion that was apparently known in the ancient world and is found in everything from the mating cycles of rabbits to the spiral shapes of ram's horns. It's just this notion of divine geometry, and that's very old. So he used numbers in the building where everything is based on this numerological formula. He also used ideas from Freemasonry, where there are several illustrations in the building, murals, and even the dimensions of rooms that correspond to the most famous building in all of Freemasonry, which is King Solomon's Temple. And more interestingly, and this took me a long time to figure out where he was going with this, is that he even incorporated notions of alchemy. Now, alchemy wasn't some pseudoscience. It was actually a very sophisticated, complex system of self-perfection. So all of these occult formula in the building are meant to make you more intelligent, better balanced, and altogether more civilized human beings. That was his promise. And so he left it as a giant crossword puzzle for nearly 100 years. And but he left some curious notes here and there that got me thinking and asking questions. And as I often describe, it's like a, you know, like that adage from the the Matrix. Do you want to take the blue pill? And so without unwittingly, I took the blue pill of Frank Worthington Simon, the architect's vision of the Manitoba Ledge.
Now, let me just ask you to give us an example of each of the things, just to go back,
okay.
in terms of like, what would you see as like, how would you see the number 5, the number 8, the number 13, some examples?
Okay, well, if you were to take a cross-section of the building's design, the reason that windows are where they are, columns are where they are, where the first and second floor are where they are, the dimensions of the whole building are determined by this numerical ratio, which appears in the body and also in the building. So if I could give you examples of 5, 8, and 13, most prominently visible is the number 13. The statue on the dome, the golden boy, which is modeled after the Greek god Hermes, is exactly 13 feet. The bison that you greet as you walk into the building are exactly 13 feet. You ascend up 3 flights of 13 stairs. If you go down every hall on every floor on every level, there are 13 ceiling lights. There are 13 stones in the archway as you are entering into the building. Now, the number 8 also repeats in equal fashion, but it's in a kind of more iconographical setting. In the very center of the building is an 8-pointed star. All the rosettes in the building are either 5 or 8 petaled. The columned orders in the building are, they're always a group of 8. Everything is determined on or divisible by 8, and the same goes for the number 5. He has 5 icons of protection at the entrance. He has basically in each room 3 or 4 references to the number 5, whether they're in the entablature or whether they're find inscribed on statuary groups, whatnot. And the whole time I was doing this, and even if you go on an official tour of the building, they'll mention this, but they never actually put it in proper context. I understood that the architect was basically a professor of architecture. He was steeped in the classical language of architecture, but more importantly is that he was a member of a very prominent Parisian secret society that used the ideology, the ideas from the patron of the occult, Hermes. And one of those features is numerology, and that's why we have Hermes on the dome of our building. And everybody in Canada, that, I mean, it's probably the most, one of the most famous buildings in Canada because of this naked boy encased in gold on the roof, who's like colloquially known as the Golden Boy. But he is basically, in actual fact, the architect had intended that to be Hermes, and he writes that in his notes. And so all of the, and this is why I call my book The Hermetic Code, not just simply because I'm ripping off the Da Vinci Code, but because all of the mechanics of the building's design are modeled on these theories that were said to have come from Hermes, who was a, not simply the messenger god of the classical world, but he was the patron of the Western esoteric tradition, knowledge of numerology, the motions of the heavens, alchemy, and the patron of Freemasonry. And so these elements show up again and again in the building's design. It's really a kind of Rosetta Stone of architecture. It's unlike any other parliamentary building, any other government building that I've ever explored. And I've taken quite a deal of interest in making sure that I wasn't inventing things, and I have looked at all the other legislative buildings, at least in Canada, and several in the United States, in which there is a close aesthetic similarity, but there is something unique going on here that you won't find anywhere else.
And definitely. Now, what I also would like you to, like, first describe, like, okay, you're first coming to there, when you first come to the front of the building, when you look up, I'm seeing these statues and stuff.
You mean on the exit? I mean, sorry, at the entrance?
At the entrance. And I look up before I, you know, like I'm away from the building. I'm looking at the building.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and I
so
look up there,
the building,
what am I seeing?
Okay, well, I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to bring the building to life for people that haven't seen it, obviously. I forgot we're, this is radio. I'm usually familiar with people that are in Canada, at least, that know the building quite well. So as you're approaching the building, you'll see six beautiful Ionic columns, on top of which is a pediment group, and inside the pediment group, it's a triangular feature on the top, there are various statuary, and the statuary in that group actually describe the promise, the hopes, the dreams, the history and culture of Manitoba, and the people that actually carve the relief in that statuary group are the same people that carved the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and the two giant, beautiful lions in front of the New York Public Library, and even the pediment group that glorifies the New York Public Stock Exchange. All of those works were done initially by the Picciarelli brothers, who first worked in Winnipeg, then later carved the Lincoln Memorial and other things. And just above that pediment group, on either side of it, facing east and west, are these two Egyptian sphinxes. They're recumbent. And it's kind of strange that they're there because most of the building's design is classical. And what I found is that there is actually a hieroglyphic inscription inscribed on their chest. It's on a place that you couldn't see it from the ground, but they took efforts to place it there, visible on the roof. Now, it's not just strange that there's a hieroglyphic inscription there, but the hieroglyphic inscription is bona fide. That is, if you can read Egyptian, and what it reads is, it's an invocation to the sun god. It calls upon the sun god in hieroglyphic formulas to basically come down and pour good life on the building. And in the center of this hieroglyphic inscription, invocation as I call it, is the name of a pharaoh who lived 3,500 years ago. His name is Thutmose III. And so that just introduced me to what on earth are these things doing in places that nobody could see them. Now, for people in your neck of the woods, you might be familiar with Thutmose III because the Cleopatra's Needle, the obelisk in Central Park, was from his reign. It actually belonged to him. And he was a great temple builder. But in the philosophy and mythology of the Freemasons, he's thought to have been the founder of their tradition, the great temple builders of old. And this building goes on and on. And then when you walk into the building, you're greeted by these two giant bison. And
well, before I'm sorry to interrupt you, but before I get to the four, the things that are across the top, what are they again? The four that are
The sphinxes, you mean?
Not the sphinxes, or the four. You say like it's the Life of Manitoba or something like that?
So in the center of the triangular feature at the top, it's called a pediment, is seated this kind of glorified figure of Manitoba seated. It's like the Manitoba version of the Statue of Liberty, a kind of symbolic representation of this idealized woman representing virtues of, you know, democracy or liberty, you know, greeting people in the New York Harbor. Well, we have our own version of that in Manitoba, and it's a seated, you know, regal woman wearing military regalia, and she's modeled after, in fact, the whole scene in there is modeled after iconography that we find referencing the mother goddess, or one of the oldest patrons of the classical world, as being this kind of goddess of fertility. And so what the architect did is he took the notions of the city and the province, and he married them with ideas from the ancient world as well, how we used to make temples. It's really, I mean, I know I've been belaboring this point very long, but in a nutshell, my interpretation of the building is this, that it is not simply government space. It's not just office space for government. It's actually a cleverly designed temple of morality. And the architect is hoping that by making this a place where laws are enacted, that the people in it, by learning about architectural history and reading the building like a book, they will become more moral and upright and upstanding people.
Wow. So, and what were the other three? I mean, I remember the Manitoba, and then there were the other ones.
On the exterior, on the pediment?
Yeah, I'm just talking about on the exterior. Yeah.
Yeah, there's... do you mean on the dome? Perhaps you're talking about that.
Okay,
so on the very dome of the building is the Golden Boy, who's really Hermes, who represents Winnipeg. And on the base of the dome of the building are these four iconographical features, these four sculptural groups, and each one of them represents earth, air, water, fire.
Okay.
And these elements were used in kind of alchemical ideas to represent the four basic elements which surround Mercury. And the reason that he's in gold is because this is kind of like the whole pursuit of the finding the Philosopher's Stone. Anybody who'd be interested in or has ever seen Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, there is some historical merit to these things. At the base of the dome, one level down, facing east, is an anomalous sculptural group. It's called officially the War Chest, and it's basically a chest flanked by these two winged warriors. And what I later found as I pieced through the details of the building is that it is a symbolic, allegorical representation of the Ark of the Covenant, the most holy artifact known in the biblical world that was unfortunately lost or destroyed, or no one knows what happened to it, and is very important in the ceremonies and culture of Freemasonry. And that particular iconographic feature on the east side is directly above a room that nobody's allowed to go into. It's off limits to all other public personnel. It's even off limits to our equivalent of the governor of Manitoba. And it is who I tend to call the high priest of the building, who's the lieutenant governor. He's the highest appointed person of the queen. And the architect went to the point of even making the dimensions of this room, which are only opened for the queen's official visit, and she just recently visited Winnipeg, and it's built to the exact dimensions of the Holy of Holies of King Solomon's Temple, which in the Bible was supposed to house the Ark of the Covenant, this rectangular war chest flanked by these two winged warriors called cherubim. And inside the Ark was, of course, the Ten Commandments and Aaron's rod and other things. But it's just this detailed. I mean, it wasn't something that I was, like, you know, in search of and trying to, you know, impose my own theories on. It was actually something that the architect had intentionally made and was hoping people would figure out what he did.
Now, the next thing I wanted to get into is that mural.
Right.
It's interesting that, like, you really have to, like, hone in on it to see what's in there. But tell us about that mural.
Okay, well, the mural is...
Now we're inside.
Well, yeah, we've ascended up. Yeah, we're inside. We've ascended up these three flights of 13 stairs. It's the most beautiful staircase hall of all of Canada. It's called the Grand Staircase Hall. You ascend up these stairs, and most people, and I, just as a sidebar to all of this, is that visitors to Winnipeg are always just stupefied at how come we have such an incredible legislative building. It really is heads or tails above every other provincial capital in Canada. And Winnipeg is now about the ninth largest city in Canada, but at one point it was destined to be this like Chicago of the North, and they'd spent every ounce of expense in making sure that they got the best architects, the best designers, and one of the figures that they were able to secure who did the mural that we're talking about when we send up the stairs in the rotunda was Frank Brangwyn, and he was just a stunning Belgian artist who is the preeminent war muralist at the early 20th century. He also did work in New York in the Rockefeller Center in New York, but he was fired by Rockefeller because he had a penchant for hiding images of Christ in his work. And Rockefeller sent him on his way because he said, well, I know what you're doing here. And even several of his murals still remain in the center today, but some of the features that he intended to do haven't. So anyways, as you're walking into the building, there's all kinds of religious metaphors and references, and perhaps the most evocative is this mural, which on the surface appears to be a war mural. It's an allegorization of Canada's efforts in World War I, and there is a military scene where there are several people who are either tending to their own needs, or they have their back turned to the viewer. But in the center of this war scene, and very prominently placed, is this wounded soldier who has his chest bare, and he's helped. It's like he's being lifted up and carried. And if you look at the mural properly and you study its kind of hazy design, you'll find that the basically Brangwyn did the same thing that he was planning on doing in the Rockefeller Center he did here, which was he embedded a very, very profound image of Christ in the work. So the figure in the center, this wounded soldier, is the figure of Christ. He's being helped carry this crossbeam, which you could see in the background, which is this cannon.
Right.
He's wearing the shroud, and beneath his feet are some skulls where, you know, in the case of Jesus, he was crucified at Golgotha, the place of skulls. And if your eyes follow up gently just above the figure of Christ, the wounded soldier who has this little halo above his head, there is hidden in plain view, and that's the kind of hallmark of the whole building's design, is everything's hidden in plain view,
yeah,
is this seated figure of Mary. And on her lap is baby Jesus, and it's clear as day. And for 100 years, people haven't ever noticed it. But then once you point it out, you say, oh, my God, it's there it is. It's
yeah,
so awfully clear. And perhaps you had that same experience.
Yeah, I was trying to, and I don't know if I was able to capture it. I was trying to get a photo, because usually if I put it on my blog, you could it'll open up. You could really see detail. So, and I don't know if I was able to get it, because I wanted, you know, I'm like blogging everything before I do the articles, but I thought that was of great interest, and even more is the star. Gotta tell
the
them.
Star is like the heart of the whole operation. That's the and it's in the very center of the building where when you step into this black eight-pointed star in this room called the Pool of the Black Star, it's just beneath the rotunda in the very center of the building. And when they built the building, they determined the actual latitudes to second-degree arc and the longitude to second-degree arc, and it's the near geographical center of all of North America's where you stand on that star. And when you stand in that star, you feel this like amazing echo of this cone of silence. Your voice is so profound, and it's kind of a mystical state, actually. And what the star does is that it represents this marriage between the city and the province, the province in the form of the star, which was represented earlier in the pediment that I described as this goddess of fertility, and directly above the star is the golden boy, or Hermes, or Mercury. Now, when they laid the cornerstone of the building, which was July 13th, 1914, they determined a particular time of day in which Venus and Mercury were in perfect alignment, which represents this kind of marriage in the building. But when you stand in the star, there is this powerful voice that you have, and if you speak loud enough, it goes to every single part of the building, like every single corner of the building. And to me, it's kind of an illustration of that, in effect, the building is really belongs to the people. It's not really a place of government just simply for, you know, the people that are elected. But if you want to know what the most powerful place in the building, it's right in that star, and it's something that you need to actually experience. It's by far the most, you know, engaging part of the tour is when you step in the star and you actually understand what it's all about. Perhaps you could even describe it.
It was like not only an echo, it's like a lot of times, like you'll echo and you'll hear it somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? You'll hear it, but this echo, it's almost like you'll hear it so within and without at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But the thing I missed, by the way, and I didn't realize until looking at the book, I understand, like, if you whistle, you'll hear the fifth of it as well.
Yeah, that's the point, really, is that your voice doesn't just echo. It echoes according to the dimensions of the length to the height of the room, which is to the eye of the dome directly above you. And that ratio is part of the ratio of numbers that repeat throughout the building, which is a two-thirds ratio, or the golden ratio, which in music is known as the perfect fifth. Now, the perfect fifth was the note that, or the interval, sorry, that Hermes, the god on the dome, was used to awaken him, or the idea was this has allowed you to speak with the authority of Hermes. And so even, for instance, Mozart in his Magic Flute incorporates the perfect fifth from the beginning to the end. And people that have studied the Magic Flute and seen, you know, Freemasonic associations in it, which are very clear, have documented this. And here in a building, the architect does the same thing. He kind of does what Mozart does to his Singspiel, he does with his building, which makes it this like kind of illustration of music, of mathematics, of harmony and proportion. And it's just a largely unexplored, unappreciated national treasure.
The whole building is amazing. I mean, and the more I want to share something with you. This kind of stuff, this kind of thing is something that would normally totally bore me to go and look at a piece of architecture, look at the building, and this and this. But this, I mean, I was on every word of Don when he was doing this. And and totally, totally fascinated. I mean, because it's a puzzle. It's like a puzzle, you know. And anybody who even saw the movie The Da Vinci Code. Oh, and I also want to share, every person I met on this trip, I said this was the height of the trip. I told everybody, whether they lived there or didn't live there, and those even who lived in Winnipeg, I even said, you have to go on this tour. I mean, it's amazing. So it'll be interesting to see how many people, you know, and I commented, like, you can look at it, and even if you have the book, it's okay. But actually experiencing the tour itself, and having it, and really looking and pointing it out, there are things that you will get on the tour that you won't necessarily get in the book.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
can you repeat that?
Huh?
Maybe I misunderstood you.
No, in other words. If you say, okay, I'll buy the book and then I'll go there and I can do my own tour.
Yeah, that's certainly possible.
You can, but having somebody there and then pointing it out and seeing it and that kind of a thing, you get more out of it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, in fact, there are several things that I didn't want included in the book because I wanted it to be experiential. It's like trying to describe to, you know, somebody who can't see what the color red looks like, and you can use every adjective in the book, but you're not actually going to capture the color. And I think
yeah.
the building is kind of the same way, that you could read about it, you could even take the book in there, but if you know how to, like, walk through it, and that's the point, is the procession through it is all very meaningful, and every step of it, it's extremely interactive, and it's meant to be interactive. It's kind of like a magical theater that you
yes.
are engaged within the
yes.
building, and as you move through it, it's speaking to you, you're speaking to it, it's a kind of mutual association.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it, as a form of theater in a way.
Yes. Well, in fact, that's how I initially described the building, because what it's actually modeled on, and there's a historical precedent for this, is that what I noticed is in the 18th century, Masons did this with garden design. Gardens were, for the most part, and even cemeteries, they were aloof, and Masons had turned them into these, like, places that were meant to ring the senses and stir the emotions and whatnot. And there were several gardens that I'd studied in 18th century Europe where they were all designed in this interactive way. You're meant to, you know, read the Latin inscription at the fountain and descend into this grotto, and you go through a rebirth experience, and how you move through the various parts of the landscape is having, like, it's the closest thing that we could come to like 3D theater. Like, I mean, people talk about virtual reality all the time, and architects were already thinking about that hundreds of years ago. How do we make something impose itself on your heart and soul? And so the precedent that the architect was following was basically these gardens, and how you walk through his building here in Manitoba is that you're meant to stop and puzzle. You're meant to hear your voice. You're meant to actually engage with these icons and these presentations and these formulas that he has in the building. And if you do that properly, it's a transformative experience.
Right. And for me, it certainly was. And I really appreciate that you calling in to tell us all about this. And my suggestion, by the way, is to go on the tour and then buy the book.
That's a good suggestion, too. I agree.
Yeah, go on the tour, then buy the book, and then you can, you know, then you can have all the things to look at and say, okay, this was that, I remember this, I remember that, and
yep.
so on and so forth. But
yep.
as I said, I thank you so much for calling in and telling us about this, and I expect to go back to Winnipeg in a couple of years when the Human Rights Museum is up.
Yes, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'll actually meet you and get your autograph on the book.
Oh, well, that I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Thanks again.
Okay. Thanks so much, Merle, for the
I appreciate it.
Writing on the show.
Okay. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yes. And now I have to say, now I'm hungry. Okay. Now I'm a little hungry. So I'm going to... Well, hello, Rowena.
Well, hello. How are you? You're hungry.
Yeah, I'm hungry. Now, I have to put you on speaker, and then I have to go
okay.
get the food out of my refrigerator. So in the meantime, chat with my audience. Tell them who you are. Okay? I'll be right back.
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
Okay.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. It's Rowena. I'm Rowena Fullenwider. Open your mouth full and wider and eat more pound cake, preferably Rowena's. Anyway, I live in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm a Navy wife, traveled all over the world, and selected Norfolk to live in. Did a lot of volunteer fundraising for children. And so as a chemist, I worked in the hospital here and then wanted to fundraise some more. So what do I do? What do other gals do? We all bake, right? So what do I do? I make a wonderful almond pound cake and raised a lot of money with that cake along with lots of my other friends, and we did a lot of good with that in our schools and churches. And we started the Opera Docent program. I'm a Girl Scout for life, all those good things that most gals do most of the time. Anyway, I now own for 27 years the wonderful jam and jelly factory of Rowena's Wonderful Jam and Jelly Factory, and we make fabulous pound cakes, special jams, sauces. Our biggest selling jam is carrot jam. You can put that on chicken salad. We put that in chicken salad in our tea room, and people come for miles for it. And we're right downtown in Norfolk. And but we have all our sauces and jams are no fat and low in calorie. We make a fabulous lemon curd, a fabulous raspberry curd, and a key lime curd. And we make many flavors of cakes, 8 different flavors, wonderful almond, lemon, key lime, all kinds of chocolate. And we make them in sugar-free. So we worked with the Diabetic Center actually 5 years to produce our sugar-free. And they are wonderful, and you cannot tell the difference between our sugar-free and our regular pound cakes. We
really?
Also make, yeah.
I wasn't going to have the sugar-free. I want the sugar, too.
Oh, you do? Well, we make a sugar-free raspberry curd sauce and lemon curd sauce, too.
I could have tasted that to see if there was a difference.
There really is. You can't tell the difference. We did it blindfolded, and they loved it. But we also ship countrywide and are very proud of what we have shipped to Iraq and Afghanistan in support of our troops, and we give a 15% discount if you have an APO or FPO address. And we just actually, through the generosity of one of our customers, shipped a pallet of cakes to Iraq and to Afghanistan in addition to our individual beautiful gift boxes that go over there. But,
all right. We're going to do the tasting now because I'm
okay,
hungry.
Okay. What are you
waiting?
Carrot
okay.
jam and chicken salad?
Well, here I have what I have in front of me. I made chicken yesterday.
Oh.
I made a fresh chicken, too. I was at the Asian market and bought a fresh chicken.
I'm coming to your house.
And so I made, what I did is I took the leftover chicken from yesterday, and I made several, salads. What I did is I combined the chicken with a little bit of mayonnaise, and then I have topped on, and I'll tell you what I did with each. So I have, and I haven't tasted them yet, by the way. So I have, what I have in front of me is a chicken salad first that's topped with the carrot jam.
Oh, wonderful. That's wonderful.
Now, I'm tasting that. Oh, that's good.
Isn't that good? You can't believe how many people just love that. They
oh.
really do come for a... And we have, like, one fraternity that buys 2 cases of carrot jam before football season every year. It's great on cream cheese with crackers, sticky meatballs, put it in your meatloaf. It's a moistener. And
oh,
you can reduce the mayonnaise and everything, too.
Yeah, I only did enough, mayonnaise and all that just to, coat it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay. Now, I'm going to the next one that has the, wait a minute, the spicy peanut sauce. Tell us about that.
Yeah, my husband's not a big eater, but he'll drink that peanut sauce.
So tell us what that's about.
Well, it's fabulous on any meats or fish. Now, I've had it on salmon, great on trout, for barbecuing and things like that. But it also makes a good salad dressing with a touch of wine, vinegar, or balsamic, just a little bit. But anytime I don't like something or I think it's, I'm a little... thinking I'm going to try this. If I throw some peanut sauce on it, I love it. But we call the peanut sauce and the heavenly curry sauce splash on gourmet or throw on gourmet. That's what my husband, who's not a cook, that's what he calls it because he can throw it on anything and make it turn into something wonderful.
Okay.
The heavenly curry sauce is great, too, on cream cheese with a few nuts and raisins and just lace it with curry as well as the salad dressing. But you can put them on any meats or fish. Some people have even used it on the curry on scrambled eggs. And I put it in tuna salad.
Wow. I haven't tried the curry yet because I wanted to do something different with the curry to cook with.
Okay.
But my comment, I just want to give you my feedback on the peanut sauce.
Okay.
It's not horribly spicy, meaning I don't need to take a glass of milk afterwards.
That's right.
I don't like spicy things. I don't like things that are hot. You know what I mean?
I don't either.
And this was just fine.
Well, wonderful. That's great.
Now, the next one I have is I just put the mustard. What is it called?
Devilish mustard.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a very unusual mustard. Children
love
it.
What do you mean by unusual?
Well, I mean, it's just not the standard. It's not a yellow. Well, first place, it has a beautiful color. But secondly, children love it. It's sort of like you're thinking like it has tomatoes and mustard and that sort of thing. And children love it like on hot dogs and hamburgers. You can take a steak and just smear it over the top and marinate it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with a little soy sauce maybe.
Oh, this
very
is
easy
really good.
But it is great for coating chicken and things like that.
That's why I made a chicken and put these things on the chicken. Now, the last thing I have here, and again, I didn't try it yet. What I did this time is I put some of the lemon curd, and then I also took a little some avocado and mashed it in.
Oh, my golly, Dave, that's a new recipe for me.
All right, wait,
that sounds marvelous. That sounds marvelous.
Oh, it's good.
Oh, I bet it is.
Oh, yeah, you got to try that one.
Now, that's making my mouth water, too.
Oh, that's so good, the combination of the lemon and the avocado. Mm.
Oh, that does sound good. Now, you can put lemon curd right at the end of your cooking of fish and chicken. I use the raspberry curd right at the end of cooking of ham and any kind of pork or pork roast. Coat a pork roast with it. There are a lot more uses for that. Most people in England, they put it on bread and toast and gingerbread and things like that. But I like it. I really like it on food, such meats and fish and chicken.
This is so good.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
And it's not because I'm hungry. I mean, it's really good.
Well, wonderful. I'm thrilled. Well, we give out, when anybody buys anything, we always send them a recipe sheet with lots of quick and easy ideas. You can even, we have a website, www.rowenas.com, and people can go on that and see everything. And, of course, we ship all over the world, so we'd be glad to ship it anywhere. And our cakes travel in a beautiful polka dot box. And the UPS men love them because they're very distinctive. So we can send people anything that they want. And our most popular gift item is wonderful almond pound cake with luscious lemon curd. But we do it in stars, we do it in hearts, we do all different kinds of shapes, and all of that's on the website. They call me the Cake Lady of Virginia. So
I'll have to get some more cakes so I can try.
Right, right.
Yes. We'll talk later about that.
Okay, that's the deal.
But I want to continue. One of the things I also want to point out is the fact that you could taste everything there.
Oh, every day. We're open Tuesday through Saturday. The tea room is open Fridays and Saturday. It's a delight. It's a really beautiful experience. But you can taste everything every day, all the jams, the sauces, and all the cakes, the sugar-free, almond, luscious lemon, double delicious chocolate, key lime. And, of course, we have chocolate cappuccino, you know, and many different shapes. And gift packaging and that sort of thing.
Wow.
And I tell everybody, if you don't taste carrot jam, we lock the door. So we won't let them out of our store unless they taste carrot jam.
Wow.
Because it's been our biggest selling jam for 27 years.
Yeah, I even noticed that Esther and Eunice sampled them too.
Oh, yeah. I like what we do, and we make everything from scratch, you know, and that's important. And a lot of Things are not made from scratch nowadays, but we do make everything from scratch. Cakes, jams, cake mixes, anything. It's wonderful. It's like we hope it looks a little bit like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. It has drawings all in the inside and outside from my children's story cookbooks. And Carrot Jam the Rabbit is our mascot. He's a 6-foot white wooden rabbit, and he's all over the factory. He's really working. He's a working rabbit. He's in the tea room. He's in the cake wrapping room. He's...
I understand he goes on adventures, too.
Absolutely. You know, just before Easter, came home and found that he had disappeared. Now, Old Dominion University had just come back from a holiday. And the girls were down a few blocks away, and they found him lounging in front of a apartment building. So they ran back and called the policeman. They said, well, how do you know it's Carrot Jam the Rabbit? Now, this is a 6-foot white wooden rabbit, right? Very heavy. Well, they said he still had his St. Patty's hat on, and he hadn't had time to put on his Easter bonnet yet. And the policeman said, well, that's good enough for me. So they picked up the girls, took them down. They had to identify our rabbit, Carrot Jam. He brought him back. And Cameron, one of our girls, wrote a little press release and said, and he made the 11 o'clock news. And she said, we were really worried about him because he's only 2 years old.
Aww.
So back and safe, and he's never disappeared since. So we're hoping for a long life with him. He sits at this particular Carrot Jam the Rabbit stands outside guarding the factory every day all night. And we have our mermaid out there too. Our mermaid, our 10-foot mermaid, which is the symbol of Norfolk, is Rwanda for Rowena and Wanda the fish. And the children named, and she is a symbol. And in my children's story cookbooks, all of this is written out. I have two of them. The Adventures of Rowena and the Wonderful Jam and Jelly Factory, and The Adventures of Rowena and Carrot Jam the Rabbit. And he comes alive in that book. But I can't tell you how. You know, you have to read the book, right?
That's right.
But it has recipes and an adventure story cookbook is what we call it. So we have fun at the factory. We call it the factory. So we have fun there. And in my children's story cookbooks, we have Mr. Jellifer Jam the Third, caretaker mouse. He's 3 generations old, and he's tired, and he wants Rowena to keep the factory going so he can rest. So he even has a little house.
I want to ask you regarding the tea room. Is there a minimum amount of people? Or can you just go in and say, I want to have lunch?
Oh, yeah, you can come in. We prefer reservations. We have 64 seats. 40 to 50 is a little bit of a better situation, I think. But people make reservations. We have lots of parties, weddings, birthdays. We even have boys' birthday parties there. And we do have bus groups that come from all over, literally, to tour the factory and to have lunch. And they usually come on. The factory is open Friday and Saturday, 11 to 4. But if we have tourists and things like that, they come on other days of the week. We open up for any group that's 20 or more on other days. And they come.
Are you open every day for people to just...
Not every day, no.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Because we have larger groups coming during the week on off days. And so they come, and they love it. I mean, I think you can feel the love and the warmth there. My employees have been with me forever. And so, you know, I think you can feel that. And the tea room is just, it really is charming.
So if I'm not, let's say, I talk, say to somebody, hey, what do you want to do today? And they say, oh, why don't we? Maybe we can go to the tea room at Rowena's.
Then they can come.
And then I could just call up and say two of us are coming in.
That's right. On a Friday or Saturday.
Right. So it doesn't have to be that you have to be with a group.
Oh no, you don't have to be with a group. We have one man that comes in once a week. The girls know what he wants to eat. He just walks in and sits down with his book and reads his book while he has lunch.
Wow.
Oh no, lots of no. We have lots of we have single gals that come in by themselves during their work week.
Oh, cool.
And then of course we have charming little girls and little boys come all dressed up. That's so cute. We have a beautiful children's menu. It's just it's one of my favorite. And we do everything on 2- and 3-tier silver trays. And you get a whole variety of sandwiches, fresh scone, cake, and fruit, and you never and little surprises that the girls dream up during the week.
Now
it's a lot like English tea, except one of my friends
yeah.
who just came back from England said, you know, they're not serving tea like this very much anymore.
Yeah,
it's
hard
sad.
To find that, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, so in terms of sandwiches, I guess is your chicken salad like your biggest?
The chicken salad with the carrot jam. But you have to have your little cucumbers. We have little round cucumber sandwiches. Sometimes the girls come up with a ham or a little turkey sandwich. We have piquant cheese. We shred, fresh shred our own cheddar cheese and make that. It's a very old-fashioned recipe here from an old hotel that had a tea room in Norfolk. And we've changed it around a little bit, and we have that. And then for the children, we do... You know, peanut butter and jellies, and we do grilled cheeses. They love those grilled cheeses and that sort of thing. And we, oh, I know, we take the cranberry nut conserve. I don't know if you have one of those jars, and we mix it with a little bit of cream cheese and some special sauce, and we make a sandwich like that, a little sandwich like that with raisin bread. The girls use all different kinds of bread, so there's surprises in there, and they really are delicious. But the fresh scones, that's what I die for, is the fresh scones. And they put different things in them every day. It can be blueberries or cranberries or plain or, you know, lemon zest or whatever they happen to think of that day.
Well, I also wanted, just so people can get an idea, because I was looking on the website and I said, oh, that's pretty inexpensive. The top price of something in terms of, you know, the lunch with the tea is what, and what do you get?
It's $13.95. Well, that's the two-tier, and that's what most people order. There is a higher price that's a three-tier, and some people order that to share. There is a $3 price, a little $3 thing to share that, but it is chock-a-block full. I mean, most women cannot eat the two-tier, and they take the food home. Men usually can finish off that two-tier. No one can finish off the three-tier. So I think it's $19.95. Or $20.95, I'm not sure. But the one that everybody purchases, 95%, is the luncheon tea, which is $13.95.
Okay.
And that's the most popular, along with the children's tea. It's very popular. Very popular. And the children get Twizzle sticks. They get little special candy. We have little octopus that have little, you know, sugar on them, and they get little cookies as well as their sandwiches and that sort of thing.
Well,
I know. The other thing is they get carrots with dips. They love their carrots. They think that's very special. And they can have apple juice or they can have tea, that sort of thing. So we really spend a lot of time working on the children's things, but we have mostly adults, of course. And we have dress up for the children too. So, you know, they can come dressed up or they can go around the corner, and we have a closet, open closet full of, you know, jewelry and hats and things like that. And sometimes grown-ups come and just put on, we have all kinds of hats to put on the different hats.
You know, I have to...
Red hat ladies come.
When I come back to Norfolk, I'm going to do this. I'm going
to
play with
it. Oh, you really have to. You really have to.
I mean, I was... And I also I should have gotten copies of your books. I forgot. I should have gotten at least a copy of one of the books.
Yeah. Well, I think when you were there, you felt how wonderful it was. We really care about
it. Oh, I did. Yeah.
And we spend a lot of time talking to them.
Yeah, it's a very warm atmosphere.
Thank you. Well, we are very excited because we were just selected as the top one of the top 25 super retail superstars in the USA.
Really?
And we're right in that. It's a hardback book. It just came out in the fall, and we're in there with Gumps and Southern Seasons. Southern Seasons is a fabulous, very large gourmet food store in North Carolina. So we felt very proud to be one of the selections in that book. We were very surprised. It's done by a company out of California. I don't know how often they do it. We think they've been looking at us for 2 or 3 years, but it's based on quality of product and customer service.
Wow.
So that top 25 in the USA, we were just elated.
Well, it was definitely deserved.
Well, we say we're little but mighty.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, not only, let's see, I have you on Esther and Eunice's blog. I have you on my blog, and I also have the article up on American Chronicle, if you want to take a look at that too.
Oh, my gosh.
And then
fabulous.
The next issue of the Queen's Times will have my article on Norfolk as well.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much. Well, Norfolk loved you, so we wanted you to love Norfolk.
Well, they may be at the Travel Media Showcase.
Yes, they will be.
I want to talk with Erin about it, because I'd like her to make sure she brings certain things there so people know.
That would be excellent. Tell her to call me too, and I will do whatever
I
can.
Because one of the other things that I don't say stood out, but of interest to especially if you're coming from New York.
Yes.
Is the bagel place, Yorgi's?
Oh, Yorgos. Yes, I was just with him today. He's a nice man.
I was hoping. I wanted to see if I can get him to at some point to be on my show, because I want to explain to people what a New York bagel is and what makes a difference.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
I'll get in touch with them to do that.
Yeah, well, tell him that I just saw him today. He's such a nice guy.
Okay, that's cool. But anyway, the show's going to end pretty soon, so
okay.
I don't want to suddenly to go blank here.
I'd love to give my website out one more time.
Oh, go ahead.
www.rowenas.com. And we have an 800 number, 800-627-8699. And we answer the phone Tuesday through Saturday, unless we're asleep. 800-627-8699.
Well,
we have a catalog we can mail.
What you'll be able to find out when you go to, especially the article on American Chronicle,
American Chronicle.
You can click on and it'll take you right to your website.
Oh, fabulous. Oh, you're so wonderful.
Doing PR. I'm going to call, right as soon as the show ends, I'm going to call you. So I'm going
to
a little more, okay?
All right, well, I'm home. Okay.
Well, the phone number that I see on here, which I'm not going to give out.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, that's the phone number I'll call you back on.
Great.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. So, again, thanks for calling in, and
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much. You're such a special person.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes. Wow. I love talking about food. So, yes, I'm going to end the show, and I have no idea what I'm going to do next week. No idea whatsoever. And but whatever it is, tune in and have a...